Anglo-German antagonism. Is this an important sefer for us all to be familiar
with? I imagine it's got to be a great sefer if it's here, but I can't tell you much about the sefer.
I'm just
going to
take it off the table.
Okay, good.
I hope that isn't seen as being antagonistic.
Right, I hear. Okay. So what do we have here at the beginning of Perkei Lunaris? We've made some progress. And we open that. Thank you. And we were. I just have to close the door. Can you?
Excuse me for just a second, because I get distracted.
So we had a discussion about the following question. According to the Rambam Shita, that any relationship with a woman out of the framework of Kiddushin is considered Kedesha. So how do we understand the parsha of Onus and Mefate? I mean, these are clearly relationships outside of the framework of Kiddushin, and therefore there's a violation of Kedesha according to the Rambam Shita. And we have a principle of Reish Lakish called Eino Loka Mishalim. We can't force you to pay for something if you're getting Malkus for it. And clearly in the cases of Onus and Mefate, you get Malkus. Because the Rambam Shita is that if it's a Bias Nus, and it's not L'Shem Ishus, then it is a violation of the law of Kedeshus. And that would exempt him from Malkus. So in order to answer this question, the Chasam Sofer refers to a Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Mem Vav, which quotes Rav, and Rav is of the opinion that the Boel was motivated Mishum Kiddushin, L'Shem Kiddushin. And if you have page 2 in the Chasam Sofer, you'll see this on line 5 from down from the top. L'shem Kiddushin. If you could underline those words or highlight them, this is the major breakthrough of the Chasam Sofer, that basically saying the only way we could understand our Mishnah, according to the Rambam Shita, is that we have to talk about a case of L'shem Kiddushin. If you don't introduce L'shem Kiddushin into the equation, then you're stuck with the old problem of Malkus for Kedesha. And therefore, in a lokum mishalim, how can he pay? And he says, "Vuad din bi ones." Even in the case of a man who forces the woman to this relationship, he knows in his mind that they're going to force him to marry her. He has no choice in the matter. In the case of ones, and therefore his beila is not a beila l'shem znus, but rather it's l'shem kiddushin. Hence, there's no violation of kiddesha. Then he goes on to say in a paragraph called Vehine, and I'm just highlighting it because this we've done in the past, but I want to go on and make progress, that Rav Asi in the Gemara, in the same Sugi Kiddush, is of the opinion that the Pasuk and the Parsha of Pitu is not L'Shem Kiddush. Now we have a problem, because how would we accept and integrate a partnership between Rav Asi Shita and the Rambam? Because if you're like Rav Asi, then his Be'ilah was L'Shem Znus in the parish of Onus and Mefate, not L'Shem Kiddushin, and therefore he should violate the law according to the Rambam of Kedesha, and then henceforth he shouldn't be chayav to pay the knas. So here's where the Chasam Sofer, if you recall, introduced the technical, logistical answer to the question, and he said that there was no hasra. You never give malchus without hasra. Then, at this particular juncture, the Chasam Sofer has another problem. Okay, there was no asra. If there's no asra, let's call him a shogeg. So what's the deal with regard to a shogeg in terms of kim lebi d'rabbi mineh? So we have a principle which Reish Lakish holds by, and that is that even in Chayvei Malkius Shogegim, you don't pay and you apply the principle of Ein Elokim Mishalem. Again, he's not going to get Malkus, obviously, because he's a Shogeg. You don't give Malkus for a Shogeg. But nevertheless, the Avera per se, even though it's for Shogeg, is enough to be an Avera Sheyeshba Malkus that could have led to Malkus, and that's enough to knock off the Chiv Mama. So we're really not in the clear if we just simply answer the question by saying there was no Asra, because the absence of Asra is only going to give you a Shogeg situation, and a Shogeg, according to Reish Lakish, does not pay Tashlumin, and that's called Chayvei Malkios Shogegim. And Reish Lakish holds you don't have to pay money in such a case. So we're going to now have to assume the following: that if Rav Asi, who says that the Be'ilah here was Shelo L'Shem Ishus, holds like the Rambam that there's a violation of the Lav of Kedesha, then we're going to have to say two things. We're going to have to say that the parasha of Onus of Fata is a case where there was no Asra, and then we're going to have to go a step further. We're going to have to reject Reish Lakish, who holds that Chayvei Mises Shogegim are potter from Tashlumin. In other words, we don't need the Malkus Pefal, we need the Lav that potentially would have generated Malkus. We're going to have to reject the Shita of Reish Lakish. We have to assume that Rav Asi holds that the only thing that knocks off the Chiyuv Mamon is the Malkus Pefal, but if there's no Malkus Pefal because he's a Shogeg, then he pays whatever Mamon he has to pay. In this case of Onus Mefat, he has to pay the Knas because there was no Malkus. Why was there no Malkus? Because it was a case where there's no Asra. Everybody with me at this point? I don't hear too many answers here, so I'm beginning to get nervous. Again, I admit there's a lot of mathematics here, but I always say if I can understand the mathematics, then Kolschke, you can understand the mathematics.
Who is it that holds that is that you do still have to pay even though the Malkus are there, but they can't be in?
That's an anonymous Amora. We don't know who argues with Reish Lakish, but now we're plugging in Rav Asi. Why is the Chassam Sofer plugging in Rav Asi? Because he wants to justify the Tashlumin of Knas in a case where you violate the Lav of Kedesha. And that's going to be a case where you're a Shogeg and not a Mezid and you don't get Malkus. That doesn't jive with Reish Lakish Shita, who holds a Chayvei Malkus Shogegim Pturim Mina Mamon because of the nature of the Lav itself. In other words, we're not looking at the Befal, but rather the abstract understanding or definition of the Lav. So the Lav itself, in and of itself, generates or has the potential power to generate Malkus. That's enough to knock off any Tashlumin, even if the man who violated that Lav is not going to be high of Malkus. So that, you know, it's a vanishing... you know about this thing, I forgot what it's called in psychology, where if you always feel your phone going off, then even... You know, you imagine the phone goes off even when it's not there. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, it's like a phantom limb.
Phantom limb? So what we're saying here, that the Malkus is like a phantom limb. That's Reish Lakish Shita. It doesn't matter whether we're going to give you Malkus Befal, we're going to knock off the Tashlumei Momon even with the phantom Malkus, which is the case of Shogeg. That's not going to be the Shita of Rav Asi. Rav Asi is going to hold that what knocks off the Tashlumei Momon is Bezdin imposing these two punishments. Befal, in actuality, phantom is not enough. We need the actual Malkus. So if there was no Asra, there can't be Malkus. Hence, there's nothing to knock off the Chi of Knas.
But is Knas considered Tashlumin, or is Knas in a separate category?
I do know that Knas has special dinim, but I don't know that they're relevant to us here, Yosef, unless you know something I don't know. In other words, there's a general concept called Tashlumei Mamon, and that applies both in the case of Mamon and Knas, and the din of Eno's Loka Mishalim applies to both Mamon and Knas. So for example, in the case of Halva, right, or let's say in the case, let me give you a better example, in the case of Nezek, right, so if let's say Ruvain, yeah. Ruvain burns down Shimon's Gaddish. It's a mission in the third parak of Bava Kamma on Shabbos. So we say that Kim Levin Rabbi. That would apply to Kefal of Agadov, which is a Knas, because the greater Chiyuv and the greater Onish will knock off the, you know, the Chiyuv moment of Knas and moment both alike. So in the case of Chamishim Shekel, Chamishim Kesef of Onis and Mefate, the Chiyuv Malkus is going to knock off the moment. So if you violate, if by having this Be'ilah he violates the Isur Lav of Kedesha, then how can you impose upon him a Knas? The whole parasha of Knas goes up in smoke like last night's bonfire, right? So the answer has to be that we're not accepting ancestor is comprised of A plus B. A, we're talking about a case of Shogeg, and what that means by Shogeg is that nobody warned him, hey, with this Be'ilah you're going to violate Kedesha. And for sure, we need that warning, because who passes like the Rambam? I don't know. So he doesn't know the Rambam that through this Be'il he violates the law and he's going to be Chayav Malkus, because he has to get Hasra'ah for that. Truth is, Hasra'ah applies even if he knows the Din, but that's a prerequisite and a precondition for Malkus. So number one, we're going to have to assume that the parish of Onis and Mefata with its Knas is predicated on the assumption that there was no Hasra'ah. Then we have to add another point, another assumption, that's the Chassam Sofer's point, namely that it's not phantom Malkus that knocks off the Chiyuv moment, but it's actual Malkus. And since he didn't get Hasra'ah, there won't be any actual Malkus, therefore he has to pay the Tashlum. Hence we justify the parish. Now, based on this, he wants to go on and give an answer to another question. So you may see a sentence that begins with Hine Birushalmi. It's actually the third line in the paragraph of Hine. I would have pressed the return button at this point. I think it's another paragraph, but again, it's based on what he's presented at the beginning of this paragraph, so he doesn't press the return button. Okay. Now, the Yerushalmi addresses the following question. From whence do we derive the conclusion that Onis of Mefata applies even in the case of Psulos? Now, you may recall that the Bavli is going to ask this question, and the Yerushalmi, to some extent, mimics the Bavli, but the Yerushalmi adds something that we don't have in the Bavli. What's the part of the Yerushalmi that we do have in the Bavli that just mimics or reflects the Bavli? That's going to be the drasha of Reish Lakish. And in the Torah itself, in the parasha of Onis, it says the word besulo or besulos three times over. And the additional extra word, besulos, is going to teach us that even if she's psula, which means that he cannot marry her, but nevertheless he's still chayv the knas. So that he calls kibishas dilan, if you see those two words on the next line. Fine, so far, no discrepancy between the Yerushalmi and the Bavli. The Yerushalmi is reiterating what we saw in the Bavli. Oh, but now the Yerushalmi quotes Tani Chizkiah. We call it Tani Debei Chizkiah, and the Yerushalmi is called Tani Chizkiah. And Chizkiah is going to derive the same conclusion, but from a different source. Because the Torah says, Im, and I would ask you maybe to open up a Chumash if you can. Okay, so I think it's in Dvarim Perkov Beis. I can't tell you exactly which pasuk it is. Maybe it's Lamed. It should say Im Ma'ein Yima'ein. I had a big blue chumash. I don't know where it disappeared. But you have a chumash, so we'll rely on the art scroll chumash.
What pasuk is it?
Approximately 30. I can't tell you because I don't have a chumash in front of me. But look for the words Im Ma'en Yima'en.
What is it? Im Ma'en Yima'en Yavi Aviha Latita Uti.
Right.
Is that it?
Yeah.
I haven't got it.
It's not there?
I didn't say it was not there.
No, it could be it's my mistake and it's not there.
I'm looking.
Oh, you know what? It's not there.
Okay.
My mistake. That's the parasha of Ma'anis. Uh-huh. Correct in Dvarim. No, I'm sorry. Okay. If you can rewind to Parshas Mishpatim, the Parsha Mefata, that's where it is. So now we're in Shmos Chaf Beis, and we're in Pasuk Ket Zayin. So that would be 22:16. I only say that because it's a way of remembering. So the Torah wants to say that there's going to be kesef that he has to pay, this mefata, even though ma'en yema'en. So the Yishalmi wants to know, what do we derive from this double language of ma'en yema'en? So leave that pasuk open, maybe we'll come back to it. And looking into the Yishalmi, Yishalmi in the name of Chizkiah says the following. Ma'ein, number one, is to be taken literally, where it says Avia, correct? Does the pasuk say Avia?
Yeah. Ma'ein, Avia.
Period. That's all I need is the word Avia. So the Torah is telling us that there's still going to be a mohar that he has to pay even and despite the objection of the father. But now there's another ma'ein, right? It says ma'ein yima'ein. So that's called mi'ein shamayim, meaning even though the Torah rejects this marriage, right? Not only in a case where the father rejects the marriage because he's not interested in her daughter marrying this shlov, but even if the Torah objects to this marriage because it's an isha psula, nevertheless the parasha applies and he has to pay the knas. So one could ask the following question: why did Chizkiah, the Yerushalmi, offer a different source? Or alternatively, why didn't Reish Lakish offer or accept this drasha of Chizkiah? The extra ma'ein yema'ein is going to teach us in mi'ein shamayim, which means there's a halachic objection to this marriage because it's an isha hasural. Now the Balabas on the Yerushalmi, as I heard from Rav Moshe Chorsky, is the Pnei Moshe, not to be confused with the Pnei Yoshua. This is the Pnei Moshe. So the Pnei Moshe says the following: that in our Bavli, in Masechta Kiddushin, we have an answer to the question as to why Reish Lakish and Yerushalmi did not invoke the drasha of Ma'en Yema'en, because the Gemara Kiddushin needs the pasuk Ma'en Yema'en for something else. Not for Mi'en Shamayim, which means the Torah objects to this marriage because it's a prohibited marriage, but rather she objects to this marriage. And the Torah wants to teach us, says the Gemara in Bavli, in Kiddushin, that there are two means here that are possible. Either she herself was Mema'enes, or her father was Mema'en. He rejected the marriage. Now, assuming that we need the drasha, the extra Ma'en for Mi'ana he, then we don't have a drasha to teach me Mi'ana Shamayim, which means the Torah objects to the marriage, Nashim Sulos. Hence, we need the drasha of how the Sulos. So far, so good. We got the mathematics. Let's go over it one more time. The reason why Chizkiah's drasha is going to be put on the back burners, and we're not going to invoke that drasha and the extra ma'ein to teach you, as Chizkiah would have it, that mi'ana shamayim, which is noshim psulos. The reason why we don't have that luxury is because we're going to use the second mi'an for the case of mi'ana he, that even if she objects to the marriage, that's enough to change the ground rules of the game. Cool. Lefiadiyusdaiti comes along with some so fair, and he says the following. Reish Lakish leta'ameh. So I'm going to read it through. I read it through a few times, but it's easier for me if I read it through. And then we'll take it from the top. So we'll go to the bottom and then back to the top. Reish Lakish leta'ameh. Now, Reish Lakish is sort of boxed into a corner, because he's of the opinion that Chayvei Malkus Shogim Peturim. Therefore, he's going to have a problem, according to the Rambam Shita, with the whole parasha of Knas. Because according to the Rambam, there's a violation of Kedesha, and therefore that's going to knock off the Knas. And what are you going to answer? Well, he's a Shogging. There was no Asra, but Reish Lakish holds the phantom Malkus that knocks off the Tashlumin. Therefore, Reish Lakish has no choice but to interpret the Parsha of Onis Mefata as referring to L'shem Kiddushin. So he's not doing this L'shem Znus. He's hoping that at the end of the day there'll be some agreement that he can marry this woman. The Isra Kra L'Mianahi. Now, according to Reish Lakish, I'm going to need the Pasuk of Ma'ein Yama'ein to introduce the case of Mianahi. Why? Why would I think that she agrees to this marriage? Is there any indication on the ground that she would agree to the marriage? Yes, there is. Why? Because he's interested in the Shem Kiddush, according to Reish Lakish. Again, Reish Lakish is boxed into a corner. He's seducing this girl for marriage purposes. And if that and that's the only way of learning this parasha, because if he's not doing it for marriage purposes, but just for pleasure purposes, then we're going to have a violation of the law of Kedesha, hence there won't be any Malkus, and even if there was no Asra, we're holding out like Reish Lakish, phantom Malkus. So the only way out here, we don't have another possibility, is that his Be'ilo was L'shem Kiddushin. So he's in effect saying to this girl, you know, let's try it out, pardon the expression. And if it goes well, you're going to agree to marry me. And hence that undermines the violation of the law of Kedesha. Oh, if it's a case where he is seducing her for the purpose of marriage, then let's hear what she has to say.
Yeah.
And perhaps if it's a non-starter, then maybe in this case the whole parasha of Onis Mefata doesn't even get off the ground. In other words, maybe you'll need a commensurate interest in Kedushin. Just like he's interested in Kedushin, I need a corresponding interest of her in Kedushin. How do we know that this parasha could even apply in a case where she's not interested in Kedushin? That's called Imma'ein Yima'ein. Okay, is everything clear about that?
And whoever's not interested in Kedushin is a Kadesh or a Kadesha.
Well, again, well, you may be right, but we want to know if he's violating that law. Do you follow the point that I'm trying to make?
Because he would be
the question is whether Loka Mishalim is going to bother us with regard to his Chiv Malkus. Right. And if he's interested in the same Kedushin, so again, he has higher motives here, higher goals motivating him, that's enough to acquit him or exempt him from the violation of Kedesha. Hence, he's not going to get Malkus. There's not even Phantom Malkus, and hence he will pay the Knas. But now, given the situation that the Torah is addressing a case where he wants marriage, maybe there's room to assume that this whole parasha is conditioned on the fact that this will consummate in marriage, will end up in marriage, but it won't culminate in marriage because she's mema'enis. So for that, I need a pasuk that says ima'en tima'en. The double mema'en means that even if she is not interested in marriage, then the parasha still applies. Hence, Reish Lakish doesn't have the luxury of Chizkiyah in the Yerushalmi, because Chizkiyah in the Yerushalmi is going to use the extra word Yema'ein to teach you Afilu Mi'ein Shamayim, even in the case of Imnashim Psulos. That justifies why Reish Lakish has to come up with Habasulos as a drasha to teach me Psulos. Let's see it inside. He says, V'itzukra L'mi'anahi Al-Kain Mafik. You know what? I don't even think it's Al-Kain. I think it's Al-Karchach. Al-Karchach means his arms are his hands are tied behind his back. He doesn't have a choice, Reish Lakish. But Mafik, he has to find a different source for the Chiv Knas and Psulos. Mi Habesulos. So he doesn't have the luxury of Chizkiyah. But now the Chassam Sofer is going to have to answer another question. So how then is Chizkiyah able to sideswipe this whole drasha of me and Ahi and say this is the source for me and Shamayim? Chizkiyah is feeling the low Reish Lakish. He holds like Rav Asi in Masechta Kiddushin, Mukam Le Afilu Bepitu Shelo L'Shem Kiddushin, Ukir Rav Asi Shal. Again, what does the word Shal refer to? Kiddushin Daf Mem Vav. Oh, now if we're going with Rav Asi, and we're holding again like the Rav about Kedesha, then we're going to have to say Velo Isrube, that there was no Hasra. And we're not going to accept the Shita Reish Lakish of a phantom Hasra, to knock off Mama. So we, if I understand correctly here, let me see if I can summarize this after all the mathematical calculations. There are two nafkaminas that he wants to point out. One nafkamina is, does the parasha of Knas apply in the absence of Hasra? Well, the answer is that if his Bila is not L'shem Kiddushin, then if I accept the sheet of Phantom Malkus, then the absence of Hasra is not going to justify the Tashlum and Knas, because he didn't have in mind L'shem Kiddushin, he had mind L'shem Znus. Hence, he violated the Lav of Kadesh, and even if you'll tell me there was no Hasra, it doesn't matter. The Lav itself lends itself to Malkus, and therefore it knocks off the Tashlumin. So the first nafkamina to this whole discussion is that we have no choice in the matter, but to add an ukimta, if you will, that the parsha of Onis and Mafata is talking about a case where his interest was L'shem Kiddushin, like the Shita of Rav in Masechta Kiddushin. So Reish Lakish has no choice. If that be the case, Reish Lakish is not free to accept the drasha of the Yushalmi. I should say the drasha of Chizkiyah and the Yushalmi of in my aim to my aim, which refers to Mi'ein Shamayim, because Reish Lakish needs the Ma'ein to Ma'ein to the case of Mi'ein Ahi. So therefore, from Reish Lakish's perspective, the only drasha that can teach me that psulos are included in the parsha is the drasha of Hab Psulos. He doesn't have the luxury of accessing the drasha of Ma'ein to Ma'ein. Mashenkin, if you hold like Rav Asi, that the parsha of Otis and Mafat is not referring to a case where he was interested in Kiddushin, and then you'll ask yourself the question, well, what about the violation of Kedesha, which should not go off the Chiyuv Mama? The answer is that we don't accept the sheet of Reish Lakish of Phantom Malkus, and everything depends upon whether it was Asra. So again, we're not going to say that the parasha of Onis Mafat is addressing the case where he's interested in Kiddushin. We're going to assume he's not at all interested in Kiddushin. But we have to add another proviso in order to justify this parasha, and that is that there was no Asra. And again, because we're rejecting Reish Lakish's Phantom Malkus, it's got to be Malkus Befoal, and since there was no Asra Nisa Shogin, there won't be Malkus Befoal. I mean, after a five-line chasam sof like this, you want to bench Gomel. I mean, it's just so complicated. It's so different than the approach of my Rebbe. You know, there's so much mathematics here. It's like a chessboard. You know what I mean? Or what is that game that they play? What's it called? Connect Four or something like that? You know what I'm talking about? And you have to already anticipate all the different moves that are possible. But what we should take away with it, you know, from this as a final, we call it in Yiddish, the Unta Shashur, but, you know, the bottom line that we want to take from this, is that there are two schools of thought here, but if we go to the school of Reish Lakish, we're going to have to assume, and this is in fact the Shita of Rav in the Kiddushin, that the whole parasha of Onis and Mafata addresses a case where his Be'ilu is L'shem Kiddushin. Those are his long-term plans, and that's his agenda, hence there's no violation of a bilas l'shem znus and an isur lav of kideisha, and that's why he pays the knas. On the other hand, there's another school of thought that's going to completely circumvent the need to assume that an onus of fact is his motivation is l'shem kiddush. No, he's interested in l'shem znus. Now, how do we get therefore to how do we solve the problem of his tashlume moment when there's a violation of znus of kiddusha? Ein adam lokev shalei. And the answer is that for technical reasons there's no malchus, namely because the eidim didn't give him asra. But you have to add another point, says the Ksam Sofer. Okay, even if there's no malchus before, but there's still phantom malchus, the law itself lends itself to malchus. So the answer is that Rav Asi in the Gemara Kiddushin is of the opinion that you only apply the principle of Ein Elokim Mishalim when he gets malchus before. But if there was no Asra and it's only a phantom malchus, it's only a potential but not an actual malchus, that's not enough to knock off Tashlumei Mamon. Hence, we justify the parasha of Onus HaMefata and the payment of Chamishim Kesem, even if I assume that his Be'ilu is L'shem Znus. So Lamaisa, what was his intention? We really don't know. I mean, we have Rish Lakish and we have Rav Asi. I mean, this is really the Sugya of Masechta Kiddushin. I mean, it seems to me, tell me if I'm wrong here, am I missing a piece, that the simple reading of the Parsha would indicate that he's interested in Znus, or am I just reading that into the parasha? No? No?
It seems clear that he is, I mean, he's an Onus or a Mefata. Which one are we talking about?
Either one. We're talking about both.
For sure, Onus is not interested in
Kiddush. No, so that's the Ksam Sofer, which that's how I thought this is not simple intuitive shot. He says, since the Torah, he knows very well, this much of a Talmud Chacham he is, he knows very well that the Torah is going to force him to marry this woman. So he's doing it not l'shem znus. You know, you wouldn't engage in znus with a woman that's going to be your marriage partner for the rest of your life. That's not a good idea. You know, that's not a great start of a marriage, you know, with a maisa znus. So this maisa was done within the framework of marriage. And Araya, he's not a dumbbell, he's not an ignorant person. He knows that he's going to have to marry this woman. So why is he engaging in znus? The answer is that this is a ploy to get her to agree to marry him. But his intention, you know, again, I'm not saying he deserves shishi in the shul, but his pure intention is to have kedusha. But I'm just claiming that, and tell me if I'm wrong here, if I'm missing something, that when you read the parsha, there's no indication that he's interested in marriage.
No indication.
So although on a lavdisha level, I'm more inclined to accept Reish Lakish, and that is because I want to reconcile the Rambam with the parsha of Onus and Mefata. If his intention is l'shem znus, then he's going to violate the law of kedusha. He's going to get malchus, or at least phantom malchus, and therefore how can he possibly pay? And the answer is, I have no choice but to assume that his interest is l'shem ishus, l'shem kedusha. Odra isi sham v'yushal. Yeah? The parach ad chizkiyah now, I hachi shivcha nami yeh lo knas. In other words, once you've derived from ma'ein to ma'ein, that afilu mi'ein shamayim, and if a man would have a relation with a shivcha, he violates the law of kedusha, so that's certainly me and shamayim, but such a woman should be included in the parasha of knas. On a footnote, I would add, I'm not sure why the Gemara is asking this question as objection to Chizkiyah. It should be an objection to Reish Lakish as well. He derives it from the parasha of Besulos. And if the Torah is telling you afilu chai vilav, afilu chai vekrisus, then maybe it should be afilu shivcha. Ah, I understand. Just occurred to me. See, sometimes when you're teaching Torah, you get a ha'ara min ha'shamayim. Because before I walked into Shia, I was really perplexed by this. I think the reason Yerushalmi couldn't address this question to Reish Lakish is because Reish Lakish is talking about a case where his bia was the same kiddushin. And Reish Lakish, as we said before, has no choice but to interpret it that way. Now, he cannot possibly have a bia l'shem kiddushin with a shivcha. So this whole concept of maybe the parish is talking about a shivcha makes no sense. So the Gemara answers that Chizkiah has to have another drasha. And that drasha is going to exclude shivcha from the parasha of Onis u'Mefat. What drasha does he have? V'lo siya le'isha mo'ar ma'her yimarenu lo le'isha be'isha re'uya le'havoya ba'ola. Please underline those two words, le'havoya ba'ola. In other words, in the case of psulos, what we have is an isha that's re'uya le'havoya ba'ola. You know, somebody could marry a mamzeris, maybe a mamzer, maybe a ger. But in the case of a shivcha, no one could possibly marry a shivcha because ain't tfisas kedushin b'shivcha. I mean, in that sense, she's like a goyita. She hasn't yet entered into full kedushas Yisrael until shichur, and therefore she cannot marry a Jew. But again, when I say she cannot marry a Jew, please make sure that you understand me carefully. I don't mean that it's also to marry her. I mean much more than that, that the Torah doesn't recognize the marriage. It's like zirma susim zirmasam, you know, she's a shivcha. And there's no way whatsoever that under the sun that the Torah would recognize a marriage between a Jew and a shivcha. So therefore, when the Torah says velosia le'isha, and we interpret to mean an isha re'uya, what we mean is a woman who can get married to somebody. Somebody can effectuate kedusha with her. And that's below seal the isha. And that comes to exclude a shivcha. Mashen kein shivcha she'ein lo havaya klal l'shum adam. Okay? Now all that is an introduction to the next paragraph. V'nira mizeh b'shas dilon. I looked, says the Chasam Sofer, in our Bavli, and I didn't find anywhere a drasha to exclude shivcha from the parasha. Isn't that odd? And Chasam Sofer says it's only because of my great scholarship that I know that this Yerushalmi, that I know exactly why a shivcha is excluded from this parasha. But if I didn't know the Yerushalmi, I don't know the Bavli, I have no reason to derive the conclusion that the shivcha is out. He says, "V'nir mizeh v'shas dilan delo mitzra kral l'me'ute shivcha." Why is it that the Gemara doesn't ask the question, "How are we going to exclude shivcha?" So, in order to explain this, he quotes a Tosfos. Tosfos is here on Chaf Tesam and Beis, and it's the third Tosfos on the page. So let me just take a break here and see if we can plow through this Tosfos, at least the part of Tosfos that's relevant to us. Okay. Says the following. Why do we need the pasuk v'lo siya le'isha? V'im tomar, you see at the last three lines and change? V'im tomar v'lishtok milo siya le'isha v'lo yitztarach lahanach ribuye. In other words, the Torah added these words v'lo siya le'isha, and it confuses us because we think it's only an isha that he can consummate a marriage with, and then we have to have all these ribuyim to say no, the parasha still applies even though he cannot consummate the marriage. Why did the Torah just avoid this whole v'lo siya le'isha? This v'lo siya le'isha is what threw us off for a loop, and we mistakenly thought that if she's a psula, then the parasha doesn't apply. Tosis answers, V'yesh lomar the itzrich lemidrash v'lo seal le'isha midaita. Now, I'm not sure exactly what this hava mina is, but I'm going to read to you his, you know, the Masiftis translation of this Tosis. He says that if not for the pasuk v'lo seal le'isha, we would have thought that yachol hama'anis l'chufa li'nasei lo. I don't know, to me that's a chote niskar. You know, he rapes a woman and then he can force her to marry him. So he says the following. Became the hutzach lekosva. Once the Torah had to add these words v'lo seal le'isha to tell us that she has to agree to the marriage, then we could possibly come to a mistaken conclusion. Lilmog mimashmos hakosiv tia. Ube'inon dafka isha sheyesh ba havaya ura'uya hi lekaima. So what does he mean? We need a woman who lends herself to havaya. And if that be the case, then the parish of Knas doesn't apply in all the psulos that were listed in our Mishnah. So for that we need these various drushas. So the Tzam Sofer, getting back to the Tzam Sofer, he says, V'hainu mishun dafilu below shun ribui. Oh. So he says the following, that we need a ribui for noshim psulos. And the Havamin is based on the fact that it says V'lo tia le'isha. Let me go over this one more time. Oh, that we need V'lo tia le'isha. We had a Havamin that maybe he could force her to marry him. And therefore the Torah had to say Midaita. And that's called V'lo tia le'isha. Now Yushalmi uses V'lo tia le'isha to exclude what? Well, whom I should say? A Shivcha. That's Yushalmi. The Bavli doesn't need a pasuk to exclude a Shivcha. That's what he writes in Ksam Sofer. Afil V'lo shum ribui V'lo shum mir lo haya ola al hadas l'shalim knas l'shivcha. So he sends you to a sugi in Kiddushin Samach Beis. I'm not familiar with the sugi right now. But what he's saying is that a shivcha is called Ama Domi L'chamor. She has like the status of a chamor as far as marriage laws are concerned, family laws. And therefore, there was never a havamina that this bi'ilah, which is considered like a bi'ilah's behema, kibbal behema, would generate a chiv knas. And therefore, according to the Bavli, we don't need Chizkiyah's drasha of lo seal le'isha to exclude a shivcha. It was never a havamina that there would be a chiv of knas in the case of a shivcha. A shivcha is like a behemoth. Mishum hachi hashta nami dixive kroy le rabos chai ve lavim ve krisus lo itzrich ve lo sia le isha le meute shivcha. I don't understand what these words lo itzrich mean. Just one second. Lo itzrich, lo silisha, lo itzrich. And therefore we're going to use v'lo silisha, as Tosa says, midaita, that he doesn't have the ability to coerce her to marry him. Whereas the Yushalmi uses v'lo silisha to exclude a behemah. I'm sorry, to exclude a shivcha. I'm not sure what he's saying over here, but I think he's saying that there's a machlokas, the Bavli and Yushalmi, about the following question. How do we view Be'ilo with a behemoth? Is that I'm sorry, start again. How do we view a bilo with a shivcha? One approach is that we see it as be'ilu with behema, and then it's clear that there would be no parsha of knas. And the other way of saying it is no, he's being boel and isha, but we're going to exclude knas here for a different reason, because she's an isha who's been excluded from all the laws. In other words, if it's a case, let me go over this one more time. I didn't have it clear. According to the Yushalmi, we're saying we need a drush of Alosi Elisha to exclude Shivcha. According to the Bavli, it was understood based on the Svara of Behema. Correct? The equation of Behema. So at this point, all I can tell you is that the Machlokas Bavli Yushalmi has had a view Bias Shivcha. Now obviously Bias Shivcha is Mufka from Ishus, but is that considered because it's like Be'ilas Behema, or it's a separate din of an Iser of Kedesha, Shivcha? Ach B'Yushalmi Matik Mi Ma'en Yimayin Afilu Mi'ena Shamayin. Now I think what he should be asking here, or if he doesn't ask it, we'll ask it, is why does Yushalmi need Velosi Elisha to exclude Shivcha? Ah, oh, I see. I'm sorry, I made a mistake. So, Moyen Yamayin comes to be Marbe, even Mino Shamayin. That's the Psulos. Nu Hava Mino Afilu Shivcha, according to Yushalmi. Let's go a step further and say if the Torah says the Parsha of Onus Mefat applies even in the case of Psulos, that's Mino Shamayin, then let's apply it even to a Shivcha. He says, Vaha Hava Mino Afilu B'Shivcha. So therefore we need a drasha. We need a drasha to exclude Shivcha. What does he mean, Mimayin, that what? That even me and Shamayin? I mean, who cares where you, from whence you derive this conclusion, this din of Afilu Psulos, whether it's from Havasulos, whether it's Mayin Yamayin, I mean, what difference does that make? In all cases, there seems to be a Hava Mina that even Shivcha would be included. Eda Shari Mapik Michad Kro Chavi Lava Chavi Krisulo Miflu Beinayim Klal Mishuda Kol Bechlal Mina Shamayim. Is Hava Mina Shivcha Nami Itzur Falo Seal Isha Lim Ute Shivcha?
What is the miut of Lo Tia Le'isha? How do you learn that Shivcha is excluded?
Right, because there's no one in the world who could ever have Havaya, meaning Kedusha, with this Shivcha.
Because
no one.
Of the word Isha, that she's not an Isha?
I think it's the word Tia Le'isha, meaning Tia means Havaya.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So the Havaya of Tia is only possible if she's not a Shivcha. If she's a Shivcha, she's Mufka from any form, any kind of combination of Havaya. It just doesn't work. Right, so he's bothered because the Bavli doesn't indicate Ki Uzeh, that we need this Drasha to exclude a Shivcha from the Parsha of Onus Mefata. We need a mute, right? So where is it in the Bavli? You hear the question, where is it in the Bavli? There's no indication in the Bavli that a Shivcha is excluded from any drasha. So here's where he comes up with a svara that it's not considered a be'ila, it's a be'ila's behema. But for some reason, he's trying to give another answer here, or at least in a more embellished, sophisticated answer to the question why the Yushalmi does need a drasha to exclude Shivcha v'lo siya le'isha. And And it all depends upon this question of chayvei lavim and chayvei krisus. He says, Shemachi hashta tichsive kroy. Rav's chayvei lavim and krisus. Shalmi mapik mihai. I'm going to tell you what he says, and maybe you'll explain it to me. So, in other words, I can get by this because I'm so far on one level of technicality, but the lumdus I don't have. He's saying the following: why is it that in the Yerushalmi we need a drasha to exclude shivcha from the parasha of Mefata? In the Bavli, we don't find such a drasha. So, you're going to tell me, all right, the Bavli holds that with the exclusion of shivcha is understood. It doesn't require a drasha. It's a svara pshuta. Why? Because shivcha is not in the parasha of Be'ila. It's Be'ila's behema. Well, that's not so intellectually satisfying, because in fact Yerushalmi needs a whole sophisticated drasha, a losi elisha, to exclude shivcha. Apparently there is some sort of basis. So what I think that Chassam Sofer is now trying to accomplish is to answer the question, why in the framework of the Yerushalmi was there a serious havamina that shivcha would be included? And he says the following, that this machlokas between the Bavli and Yerushalmi about whether you need a drasha to exclude shivcha from the parasha of Mefata, that depends upon a previous machlokas with regard to psulos. How do we know the psulos are included in the parasha of Knas? So there are two basic approaches to that question. One approach is that we're going to take extra psukim one by one, we're going to count them up, and we're going to go through the various levels of psul, the chumras avera. We're going to start with the lowest level, and that's chayve lavim, oh, she's going to be included in the parish. And then we're going to go up to the next level, of course, another extra post. We'll get up to chayve krisus. That's going to be the approach of the Bavli. Hence, the Bavli needs Besula, Habesula, Habesulos. We're going to go from Besula, who's a Kshera, to a Besula, who's Chayvei Lavim, and finally all the way up to the most severe kind of Psul in our context, and that's Chayvei Krisus. Now open up to Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi, in the name of Chizki, has a whole different source for Psulos. And that is Ma'ein to Ma'ein, and the second Ma'ein is referring to Shamayim. And here we're not distinguishing at all between different gradations of Isurim, of Psul. We're not going to say, well, you know, we need one pasuk for Chayvei Lavin, we need another pasuk for Chayvei Krisus. We're going to just lump it all together and derive it as a ribui from the word, the extra word Yima'en. Wait a minute, if you derive it from an extra word, then we have a principle, Ein Lecha Bo El Michidusha. What gives you the right to include all psulos? Why don't you say maybe the Torah is only including Chayvei Lavim, but not Chayvei Krisus? But the answer is because it's all included under this drasha of Yima'en, which means Mi and Shamayim. Mi and Shamayim is an all-inclusive concept that doesn't lend itself to gradations between Chayvei Lavim and Chayvei Krisus. Now he goes a step further and he says, therefore the Yerushalmi needs a pasuk of a lo si elisha, which we don't find this drasha in the Bible, in order to exclude a shivcha. Why? Because since we don't have gradations in the Yerushalmi, it's yima'en to the exclusion of mi and shamayim, which means that even when there's mi and shamayim, nevertheless it's included in the parasha of ones u'mafata. Hence, we have a real serious problem. Maybe in the case of Shivcha, where the Torah objects to a marriage relationship with a Shivcha, there too we should include it under Yemayim. And it's a ribui for all cases of Yemayim. Hence, the Bavli Yerushalmi needs a separate drasha to exclude Shivcha. Now, what is that drasha? The Losia Leisha. But in the Bavli's frame of reference, where the Bavli has these different gradations, and for each gradation, from Chavi Lavim all the way up to Chavi Krisis, we need a special pasuk. Then it's a milsa de pshita that Shivcha is excluded. Why? Okay, I can't tell you 100%, but a little bit light I can shed on this. The greatest ribui would be Shivcha. That would be the third level. The first level would be Chayvei Lavin. Then the psul is because the Torah says, Lo Yovo Mamzu Bekal Hashem, or whatever it says there, right? Then we have a second ribui, even in the case of Eishes Achiv, B'Shalom Boker Mitzvah, that's a lav that generates Kares. Even so, it's included in the parasha. Now, I would need another pasuk to include even a Shivcha, because a Shivcha is even more far removed from the parasha of Onis Mechatan than even Chayvei Krisus. Because not only is there no heter nesuin, right, the heter marriage, but there isn't even a possibility of marriage. She's a behema. So I need another pasuk to include Shivcha. Do I have another pasuk? I ran out. I only have three cards in the deck. I got Pesula, Habesula, and Habesulos. If I don't have a fourth card, then I cannot include Shivcha. Mashen can, according to the Yushalmi could include Shivcha. Why? Because all the other categories were excluded in one lump sum, because the Torah says, even though I'm objecting to the marriage, nevertheless, you have to pay the knas and 50. Oh, if it's all a matter of whether the Torah objects, then we have to throw Shivcha into the pot. Right? Because Shivcha is another case of Yemayim, where the Torah prohibits that relationship. Hence, I need the drasha of a losia leisha. I tell you, there are two things that are exciting about this Chassam Sofer. One I call Derech HaLimud. You see how much drashos mean to him in two ways. Number one, in terms of the structure of the drasha, and number two, in terms of whether you need the drasha or you don't need the drasha. For the Chassam Sofer, that's like paramount. That's like a cardinal. If you were to ignore the fact that in the Yerushalmi there is a drasha, in the Bavli there's no drasha, that's a cardinal sin. You've undermined and vitiated the very Derech HaLimud. Now, I was in the Rav Shir for 5 years, that's not a very long time, but I don't remember that the Rav ever gave a shir about why the Bavli has a drasha and the Yerushalmi doesn't have a drasha. You know what I mean? To the Rav, that would be considered sort of technical and you know, you're getting your fingers dirty over here. It's like, instead of using a spatula to put the raw meat on the barbecue, you know, you take the meat in your hands and you put the chicken in your hands. You know what I'm saying? The Rav didn't go down to all those levels of minute details. You know, let's compare the Bavli and Yerushalmi. And the second thing that I find exciting here about the Chassam Sofer is that not only is he sensitive to drashas as to whether you need a drasha, you don't need a drasha, and why the Bavli omits the drasha and the Yerushalmi has it, but he goes into a whole methodological analysis of what kind of a drasha is it. And he basically sets up a fundamental difference of two categories of drashas. One drasha is based on how many words are extra in the pasuk, and how do we therefore go from one chiddush to a greater chiddush to a greater chiddush. And if we run out of words, then we have to cut out the greatest chiddush, you know, because we don't have an extra level, an extra word for that greatest chiddush. So he sets up Chayvei Lavin, and then on top of that he's got Chayvei Krisus, and then he has Shivcha. But we didn't have an extra word to be Marav Shivcha. And if we go back to our assumption that Shivcha is a behema and there's no knas, then there's a different type of a drasha, which doesn't lend itself to the stratification to this hierarchy of different chidushim. And that is a drasha that cuts right through and says, is it us or is it mutter? Is the Torah objecting or not objecting? That's called mi'un. So the extra word mi'un really tells me that whatever the Torah would object to in terms of the het and the suin, all those women are included in the parasha of Knas. Oh, if that be the case, then included in this pot, we have to throw Shifra into the pot. Because the Torah is marva all the women that are objectionable in the eyes of the Marshal.
But I thought mi'un only applies in a possible relationship. Does it make sense to say that there needs to be mi'un in a relationship that can't happen?
So you write yourself as far as the first mi'un, but not the second mi'un, right? The Torah says mi'un to mi'un. So the first mi'un has to do with objecting to the marriage. That only applies when there's a possibility of marriage. The second mi'un is telling me something totally different. That this chiyuv knas applies even when the Torah objects to the marriage. When there's something that would be repulsive and would violate the will of God in this marriage. From that perspective, it makes no difference whether you talk about Chayvi Esek, Chayvi Lavim, Chayvi Krisus, or even a Shimcha. They're all in the same boat. They're all in the same category. Does Hashem object? So the Torah went out of its way to say that even if the Torah objects, it's still included under the Chiv Knas. If that be the case, then we should even include Shivcha. Now I justify the Yerushalmi's need for the drush of Losi Isha. To exclude a shivcha. Let's go on to the next piece in the Chasam Sofer. I'm heavy into Chasam Sofer today. And then we'll get back to Mishkan El Sarokin. Ubazeh, you have it? Ubazeh Yishlom Eloshan Hashas Tishmatin De Ka'omar Lafuki Mihai Tana Velo Ka'omar Lafuki Mihani Tanoi. Okay, so let's go through a few lines of the Gemara here on Daf Chav Tes Amid Beis. Okay, this is what I'm about to teach in my 7:30 class in the Shtiblach. Ulafuki. So let's see if everybody can find the words Lafuki. You see Tosdim Maskel Isru?
Yeah, right in the middle of that.
So right across from the Isru, you see the words Lafuki. Lafuki means that the Mishnah that has a chiyuv knas in the case of psulos is coming to exclude the opinion of another Tana. And that Tana is the Tana in the Braisa. Now, Disanya Velosi Eli Isha Shimon Ate Mani Omer Isha Sheyesh Ba Havaya. Sheyesh ba havaya, to the exclusion of a woman that if he would be mekadesh the woman, there would be no tfisas kiddushin.
Yeah.
That means that in the case of an iser kares, where there's no tfisas kiddushin if he marries her, she's not included in this parsha, whereas our Mishnah includes even chayvei krisus. That's the sheet of Rav Shimon HaTeimon. Now we get to Rav Shimon ben Menasya, and he disagrees, and he says, Omer, there's only going to be a chiv knas in an isha ra'uya l'kaima. Only in the case of a woman with whom the marriage could be recognized. You know, he can continue married to her. Isha ra'uya l'inaseila. But if it's an isur, has nothing to do with Tfisas Kiddushin, then there's no Chiv Knas. Now, the Chasam Sofer, what do you say?
No, I'm just asking the Gemara's question, might be
now. Oh, so that might be now is going to be all those cases where with Chayvei Lavim and so forth, where there is Tfisas Kiddushin, they would be included in the Parash of Knas according to Shimon HaTeimoni. As opposed to Rav Shimon Menasya, who would exclude them because it's not an Isha Ra'uya L'kaima.
Oh, so that's much broader.
Correct. Then there's something very odd going on over here. Because the Gemara's language is Lafuki mi hai tana. What does that word hai mean? Is it singular or is it plural? Hai.
Singular.
And it says Tana in the singular, right? So it's Hai Tana.
It would be Hani Tanoi otherwise.
Oh, so it should have said Hani Tanoi because in effect, in truth, our Mishnah is against both Tanoi, whether it's Shimon HaTeimoni or of Shimon HaMenasseh. It's against Shimon HaTeimoni in the case of Chai Vei Krisus. It's against Shimon HaMenasseh even in the case of Chai Vei Lavin. So that's the question of the Chassam Sofer. You have the Chassam Sofer, he says, V'lo kamar lafuki mehani tanoi. V'us epis, why does the Gemara say lafuki mehani tanoi? Meaning both the tanoi. So I noticed here in the Masifta, he gives an answer to this question. He says that high tana means the tana of the brisa, the three tanoim. There's Rav Shimon this, Rav Shimon that, and then there's another tana who organized the brisa. And he brought down two shitas. Well, he should have brought down a third shita, namely the sheet of our Mishnah. But our Mishnah is against that tana. But the Chassam Sofer is not operating with that assumption. Now, what is Hey Aleph Shin? The Asi Shapir? That's what I think the Hey Aleph Shin is.
Okay,
can you accept that?
Sounds good.
All right. Now, I'm noticing here that some Sofer that he makes up abbreviations as he goes along, so that always makes things a little bit more challenging. He says the following. Devade lo psika le kuli hai sheyia shimon ha-teimoni de lo kamas nisen de yesh lomer de isha she'en ba havaya de ka'omar hainu shivcha. In other words, shimon ha-teimoni comes to exclude the case of an isha she'en ba havaya. In other words, Rabosai, what he's saying is that there are two ways of learning Shimon HaTeimoni. A or B. Let's go through the two possible ways of learning Shimon HaTeimoni. Is he excluding a woman whom or with whom this Boel could not have issues? Or he's excluding a woman with whom nobody in the face of the earth could have issues? So take a look at the Gemara's language. The Gemara says that Shimon HaTeimoni Omer Isha Sheyesh Ba Havaya
to anyone
to the exclusion of a Shivcha, because she's already Ain Ba Havaya to anyone. And if that be the case, there's no contradiction between Shimon HaTeimoni and our Mishnah. Our Mishnah would also accept that there's no knas in the case of a Shivcha. And that is because there's no possibility of Tia Leisha. So in the possible low Tia Leisha, what is Shimon HaTeimoni focusing our attention on? Is it the word velo or is it the word Tia? If it's on the word velo, then he should have said Isha Sheish Lo Ba Havaya. But he drops the word lo because he's learning the word is tia. Tia means to anyone. And he's coming to exclude a shivcha. Hence, the Gemara says lafuki haitana in the singular because it's only a reference to Rabbi Shimon ben Menasseh as opposed to Shimon HaTeimoni. He says vateda shari lo kamashain lo bo havai. Please highlight the word lo. Yeah. The Gemara omits the word lo, which would imply a woman that he can't have a relationship with, like Chavi Lam, Chavi Esay, Chavi Krisus. Havi Mashma Li Alma Yesh Havai. Oh, if you would have had the word lo, it would have told you clearly that other people could have, right? If you're not related to this woman, if she's not Eishes Achiv, then you're allowed to marry this woman, right? So that would have made sense. Rak lo ein havayah. So that would have been a perfectly smooth way that the Gemara could have presented this. But instead, the Gemara says, what's the language? Isha sheyesh ba havayah. That anyone in the world could marry her. As opposed to but to the exclusion of a woman who's not a shivcha. He says the following: El she'ein bo havai, from the absence of the word lo, mashma klal, no one has havai, dainu shivcha. Amal chayvi lavin ukrisus yesh lehem knas, because other people could marry this woman. It's only a shivcha. That are not a right.
In other words, it's not intrinsic in the person. It's just their status to this individual.
Right, their relationship to this individual.
It doesn't matter who it is.
Correct. Usvile ketan masnisen. Hence, I understand why the Gemara says la fuke hai tana in the singular, because it's not coming to exclude both tanoim, because Shimon HaTimon is absolutely reconcilable with our Mishnah. Usvile ketan masnisen. He holds like the Tan of our Mishnah, Rav Shimon HaTeimon. V'lo Asi El Afukir Rav Shimon Menasi. Di'yu v'vadei pligi amasnisin. Because Rav Shimon Menasi says, Isha Ruhi L'Kaima. And the parish is limited to an Isha Ruhi L'Kaima. That's against our Mishnah. Our Mishnah has a whole list of women that are Asura l'kaima, not Ruhi l'kaima. And yet there is a Chiyuv Knas. So that's this beautiful Shtikl Torah here in the Chasam Sofer. Okay, I don't have... There's nothing in the cup. Hopefully not the head, but the... Now he wants to add another piece to the puzzle. He says, I don't get it. The Gemara asks a question, my beinayhu. What is the Gemara? Is the Gemara missing the point over here? I mean, the Gemara is going to quote Rav Zera, that mamzeres unesina yikaminayhu, meaning where there's a lav without kares. So there's tfisas kedushin, but it's eino ruil kaima. He says, my kusha, valo yikaminayhu mevuar. And I don't have to be such a genius to come up with the Ikum Einayim. V'od mefarsh ha-mora shechidesh ha-ika di'amri hu Rav Zera ki'ilu acherim lo yadu. He's basically asking, well, why do you have to quote Rav Zera, as if to say, without Rav Zera we wouldn't have known the difference. El ha-koch b'haim es sufa kashas. This is why we need Rav Zera. The Efsha de Gam Chayvi Krisus Ika Beinayim. Oh, this I don't understand. What does he mean, Efsha de Gam Chayvi Krisus Ika Beinayim? Ah, because Shimon HaTeimon is only coming to exclude Shivcha. But Chayvi Krisus, which is again a reflection of the particular relationship of Erva between the Boel and that woman. So that's considered, according to Shimon HaTeimoni, an Isha
Sheyesh
Bahavaya, because for someone else she has Havaya.
Yeah.
Alright. So,
Shimon ben Menasseh also, Isha Ruhi Elakaima, she's Ruhi Elakaima to somebody else, not to.
No, Isha Ruhi Elakaima means, is he able to establish
another?
Right.
Right. Yeah, right.
Now, we only have about 15 minutes left, but I'd like to go back to the Mishkanos HaRoim. And in this case, I'd like to look on page Ayin Vav. You see where he says Alakusis. Pirush Rashi, Kosova Gerei Arayosem, V'yeshna Belav Delot Tischatein Bom. Hikshu Atosvis, Amai Yeshlem Knas, Hovedes kokhovim ein lo knas. Kid apart li elbidaf yud alef amin alef. Yavinin li knas vi azlo vi ofla bigi yuso, benachri yuso. She'll spend the money on worshipping idols. So how can it be that the kusis is a non-Jewish woman? And the Mishnah says he has to pay a knas for having this relationship with a non-Jewish woman. The Gemara says explicitly that in the case of a non-Jewish woman there is no knas. Yeah, page Ayin Vav?
Ayin Vav.
One second.
Yes.
Okay, so we have Ayin Vav. You should get Ayin Zayin as well, but it's not going to be in this pile.
I have Ayin Zayin.
Oh, you do have Ayin Zayin?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's a single time.
All right. So you have a full set.
Which paragraph are you in right now?
So I finished the first paragraph, number Tes, Upirish Rashi,
yeah,
which is on the left side, left column.
Got it.
Vatosis l'shita sayu azli li el yedalf on vezu maskala baidim in adin ein li nochris knas. That when the Gemara asks, how is it possible that we would pay a knas to a shivcha or to a nochris and she'll use it begiusa, Tosis says, you see clearly from the Gemara that there is no such thing as a knas for a nochris. And therefore he asks on Rashi here, if we identify kusis as geri arayis, which means the geris is worth nothing, then what we're looking at here is a case of a nachris. The ulam ein zeh davar muskam. So this very premise of Tosfos, that there's no such thing as knas for a goyita, is not universally accepted. Rosh b'kedusha kasev the Yisrael mumer liakam yorish es aviv. When we come from him, efshar tov laseisa biad bezdin. So, in other words, do we want the son to inherit his father's property when he, the son, is a a comer? He's a priest in some monastery in Thailand. I don't know. So the Gemara establishes, says the Rosh, that if it's possible, we'll give the money to Bezdin. Mm-hmm. We're not going to give it to this idol worshiper. Lo yavina le lemumar di ozel liyosel viachale vigiyusa. So it seems from the Rosh that so now the Rosh wants to prove this, and he says, So in other words, the Rush assumes an equation between the following two issues. Issue number one is a ben who's mumer liaku, will we take away, rob him of his Yerusha and make sure that Yerusha ends up in the hands of Bezdin? We don't want him spending it in the idolatry monastery. And now we have another issue: a woman who was raped and she's a shiksa and she wants to collect knas, and now we're afraid that she'll spend that money for her idol worship. Do we allow her to receive knas? And the Rosh makes an equation between the two. Well, in the case of a woman who was raped, we're going to take that money away from her because she's going to spend it on a monastery. Therefore, ipso facto, by virtue of analogy, the same in the case of a ben who's a mumer li'avodah zarah, we're going to take away the money of his Yerusha and we're going to leave it in the hands of Bezdin. So you see one thing clearly, that according to the Rush, we're imposing some sort of an extraneous or an outside halacha here. You understand? We're suspending the normal sequence of the halacha. So in the case of Yerusha, the normal sequence would be the father dies, the son now inherits the father. We're going to suspend that because we don't want the son to use that money for the monastery. But Mikra did, if we didn't rip out the money from the hands of the Yoresh, of the son who's a Mumer Liakum, he the son would inherit it. And the same thing applies, says the Rosh, in the case of Knas. That really she, this Nachri, should collect the Knas. We're going to take it out of her, it's just because we don't want that money to be spent on a monastery. But you see that the Rosh fundamentally disagrees with Tosfos, and he thinks that even a Nachris. So let's say, for example, and that's going to be the next paragraph in his presentation, let's say you had a Nachris and you know that she's not going to use it for paganism. In such a case, according to the Rosh, she will get Knas. And if we identify Rashi with that shita, then you see that despite the sugya yud aleph, we're going to reinterpret the sugya yud aleph to indicate no, that the nachash does collect knas. He says, and therefore, for example, if we know that this nachris is a psula, we have reason to believe that she didn't give herself over to any other relationship. Lo yavin lo, we can't give her and allow her to collect the knas because she's going to use the monies for the monastery. Aval kusis. She'eino ovedes avodazor. If you have a kusis who's not Jewish, but on the other hand, she doesn't worship the paganistic avodazora, nehi de'ein la din Yisrael mibnei shegerei arayos hem mikom kol kedas yeshla. So we're not going to recognize the gerus of a kusis, and therefore she doesn't have the status of a Jewess. That's called Geiri Arayis, but nevertheless she's going to receive Knas, says Rashi, even as a Nochus. The Gemara says on Daf Yud Aleph, we're not going to allow the Nochus to collect the Knas. Okay, that's a different Aloch, that we're afraid of idol worship. But if Lu Yitzhu, we weren't afraid of idol worship, then a Nochus would in fact collect the Knas.
A Kuti fits into that.
And a Kuti, who's now a Nochus, because Rashi holds Geiri Arayis, and she'll collect the Knas. So now he asks the following question. This is the Yishalmi we studied earlier with the Chassam Sofer. This Shivcha filu mishumeres ein lo knas. Shivcha never collects a knas, even if she's mishumeres. And the mute is because it says lo siya le'isha v'shivcha lav bas havayahi. So how do we understand the difference between a nachris and a shivcha? A nachris collects knas. We're going to rip it out of her hands if she is worshipping idols. And if she's not worshipping idols, let her have the knas. In the case of shivcha, it seems that she is excluded from the parasha of knas. And that would apply even if she would be, if there would be evidence to the effect that she is a besula. Why? In other words, shivcha is a woman who's like a behemoth. She can never enter into marriage.
She has a way of changing her status.
But in the case of a nachris, she can marry if she's misgayer.
Right.
But a shivcha, in her status, is mufka completely from issues, and therefore she's mufka from knas. It's a pretty fundamental or revolutionary idea that, again, I like to stick to a simple pshat here, that we have a new idea over here with regard to shivcha, that even if she's not doing any bad stuff, if you know what I mean, she still will not collect knas. But the real new idea is that a nachris really does collect knas. And it'll be a chiv on the boel to pay the nachris. However, whether or not she will be allowed to receive that knas, that's a different story. That depends upon her behavior pattern.
But he has to pay it.
But he has to pay it in the case of a nachris. Case of a shivcha, that's totally different. Yeah. This is a very interesting sugya. Then it comes out that you know, according to Rashi, you pay knas to a nachris. Before, where does the money go? That's already a secondary issue. It depends on the actual behavior pattern of this nachris. Then he says, "Od yesh li yashev da filu neimah de midina ein le nachris knas." Now we're going on to page Ayin Zayin. Mikolakom le kusis yesh knas. Now he wants to differentiate between a nachris and a kusis. It was only the fringe benefit, the fringe group, the Erev Rav. You know, they were the ones amongst the Kusim who refused to accept the Jewish religion. The Ikar Psulim Mishum Miut Nachrim Shes Arvu Behem.
How does he know this?
He says the following.
The Gemara says Hikuti Margere Arayot. And he's saying, well, not really. It's just a certain amount of.
So this he's basing on a Pnei Yoshua. Again, we didn't see the Pnei Yoshua. You remember I told you the other day that the Mishkanos Aron is like an anthology of Achronim. Mm-hmm. And it's only in the footnote that he reveals which Achron he's quoting. He says, Iker Psulim Mishum Miut Nochrim Shenis Aravu Bohem. So all the dinim of Kusim apply Mitzad Achumra Durabonon that we're worried about the Miut. Umishum Hochi in the next paragraph, Svile Larashi, the Eish Lekusus Knas. Right, because most of the Kusios are sincerely accepting the Jewish religion. Afilim An Yom Lod Zrina Basarubit Mimono. Hocha Lo Chashin Le Miuta.
He says at the end of this piece that there are Eved v'shikha nidaru b'hem. That's the worst possible thing. Because they are not ru'uyim v'chlal, and they have no way of changing their status.
Right, but that's only a mute. This arav b'hem means that there was some, the kusim didn't hold on to a very high level of religious practice, so they were more laid back about it, they were conservative or reform, so they would allow for Shivcha to get entered into the fold. That's as far as the Kusim are concerned.
But if you know that there's an Eved or a Shivcha in there, then it's like Kavua.
Ah, okay, excellent. That's a great question. Kol Kavua Kemet Tal Metzadon. How do you work with that? So that's all Sugya in the second parak of Ksuvus, which is called Almanas Isa. Do you remember that Sugya? It's on Daf Yigil Yidal. One of the most complicated sugyas there about Sveksvekis and Kavua and Rov. But I just wanted to get this last paragraph in Mushum Hachi, because then we have a complete unit here. Svil Rashi, the Eish Lekusis Knas came into Ruby Yisrael. Now, we have a problem. Hamotzi Mechavel of Arai. She wants to collect the Knas. She's claiming that she comes from the Kusios that were, that had a full fledged genuine conversion. Well, we have a principle called Ein Holchim B'Momen Achar Rov, that even though she has a rov to support her claim, there's still a miut. And when you're motzi from someone else who's muksak, you can only do so if you have an absolute claim. A vade claim. It can't be a suffix claim. He says, "Afilu ikamish maya galya shehime amiut mikomakom kevin delini kedushin as lina basaruba v'neregolel is mevela mikri ba havaya b'toris vad bas havaya b'toris vad." He says that this is not a normal case of dini mamonos. If I claim, well, your shar, kicked up the pebbles and killed my chamar, so you have right to say, well, no, there's a miut here. And therefore, ain't also a moment of harav. But that's not how it works here in the case of Knas. What we want to know is, what's the status of this woman? Is she from the rove or is she from the mute? And the answer is, as far as marriage laws is concerned, we're going to assume that she came from the rove. So, for example, if this woman gets married and somebody has a bila with him, they're going to be put to death. Now we call her a bas havaya, because befall, based on this halach of rov, we're going to allow her to get married, and we're going to recognize her marriage. Oh, if that be the case, then she's considered a bas havaya, hence she would be included in the parsha of knas, of onus umafat. Okay then, so Blinetta will continue this next week, but I want to wish everyone a great Shabbos parshas. Bichukosai here in these parts of the world. Which means, by the way, that we're going to read Parshas Naso before Shavuos. In America, in Chutzlitz, that can never happen. The reason why in Chutzlitz they're not, why aren't they catching up to us with by doubling up Bichukosai with Bahar Bichukosai? And the answer is because they want to make sure that the last Parsha we read before Shavuos is Bamidbar. And they want to avoid a situation where you read Naso before Shavuos. Here in Eretz Yisrael, we're not so frum. We don't worry about reading Naso before Shavuos.